Nintendo has listened to their consumers and will end your search to find last year's hot holiday item. Plus, Microsoft joins the 21st century and will soon allow you to refund digital games. Tonight is April 16th, 2017, and the Bobby Blockwell Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is Edwin Akeriper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And What Up G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
I agree, chat. It's hogwash. The very first thing I'm about to talk about is hogwash. I agree. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. You're joining us live here at the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com. Welcome. Head on over to our chat room, live.vognetwork.com. I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night, and if you are logged into the site and you are here live, you can check in. All you got to do is you go to the live page, you check in, and you can check in just like DJ Ronma S. and Wyland, who checked in at some point during the intro to the show. Welcome. Thank you all for being here. If you're listening on the podcast feed, there will be a passphrase rudely interrupting the show at some point, and you can just remember that word and put it in on the site sometime during the next week and get the exact same amount of points and love and adoration from me. A little bit later on, I am going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwell Show. That is all one word. Or toll-free in North America is 1-888-36-GAME-1. Although, really, do we really even use phones anymore? I mean, now that, like, there's the Skype app on your phone. But anyway, I still have it. I'm keeping it. It'll be there for those who actually want to use it. Or you can comment on an episode over at VogNetwork.com. You don't need a phone or an app to do that. You just need to have a web browser of some kind. Probably not a BlackBerry or something. I don't know how well our site shows up on BlackBerries. Or even on mobiles at all, because I designed it before mobile websites were really a thing. That's my bad. So a couple things that's going to be going on pretty soon out here in the southeast, the eastern side of VOG Network. We had a very successful West Coast event that VOG helped with, the Sacramento Indie Arcade. That was last week. OLR returns tonight to talk all about what they didn't talk about when they were on the air for like 30 hours on Saturday. Only on Saturday. They were on for 30 hours on Saturday. Don't ask me how they did it, but they did it. But out here on the East Coast, we've got a couple things. I'm going to mention one thing each month for the next 3 months. So in 2 weeks... I am not canceling a show for this, so don't worry. But the Vintage Computer Festival Southeast is April 29th through 30th, and VOG Network is actually going to be... I'm going to be doing an exhibit, and I'm going to be theming it VOG Network stuff, so there's going to be VOG Network stuff all around, like postcards, and I'll be there, and I'll be filming a video at the Vintage Computer Festival Southeast. You can go there and see a whole lot of old computing equipment. Some old gaming systems do show up there. And I'm going to be showing off my 90s PC, which is going to be like one of the later exhibits in the timeline of things that are there. But I'm excited to actually exhibit there for the first time. I've been to all of them. This is the fifth one. And I even did a video from last year's event to show you kind of what was there, some of the mainframe computers they have. And we've got an Apple pop-up museum. But yeah, so the Vintage Computer Festival Southeast, April 29th through 30th. It's $15 for both days or $10 for one day if you are here. It is in Roswell, Georgia, which is a little bit north of Atlanta. If you are south of Atlanta, you are going to have fun getting there because you'd have to go over the bridge that collapsed that will not be fixed by then. But you can get around it. Rageinator asks, when is VRCon sponsored by you? The biggest VR convention actually just happened a couple weekends ago. But they're out in I think it was VR LA, And so I think it was actually at the Los Angeles Convention Center, which is where E3 is. But I know there's the SVVR, which I don't remember exactly what it stands for, but that's another big one. So, no, there's some very big VR conferences. They're just all out in California. So it's not sponsored by me. It's sponsored by people that are actually in that thing. None of your buzzer asks, when is the autoexec.bat and config.sys editing class of the event? Probably Sunday at 1 o'clock. I don't know. I do know that I am also going to be on a panel. They're bringing all the podcasters that are there up on stage, and they were like, this is funny. So you people that are podcasters might understand this as well, but also people who listen. They were like, yeah, so should we do 30 minutes or an hour? And like, there's like a list of like five podcasters that are going to be up there, and I'm like, dude, you are not going to get five people who like to talk and time box them to 30 minutes. You're not going to get that. So, but I think it's going to be like Saturday afternoon is when that panel is going to be. And usually one of the other podcasts record it and they put it on their feed. And then I tell you all where to go get it. So that's also going to be happening on Saturday. So if you can only make it one day, Saturday is probably the better day. In May, I'm not going to be doing anything officially like at the convention, but we have been accepted again as media for MomoCon, which is an anime and gaming festival. It is Dragon Con's more appropriate cousin, because they actually now work together. They have a strategic partnership. It's at the Georgia World Congress Center over Memorial Day weekend in May. Anime, gaming, and all that stuff. I did a whole bunch of... They have an indie game festival where they even have a judging thing, and so it's actually a big award show and stuff. They bring in big-name journalists from all around the world, Rami Ishmael from Vlambeer's been there for the past couple years. But they've even brought in that Game Over Greggy guy and some other, and Mike Fahey from Kotaku, who's local. But they bring in some big names for this thing and judge them. I'm not a judge or anything. But I'm going to be going there and shooting YouTube videos and seeing what the indie game scene is going to be showing us. And we've been graciously accepted as media. We don't apply as media for many things anymore as Vogue Network, but MomoCon has been very good to us over the years. It's where I got Jennifer Hale's bumper and interview and stuff. So going to be concentrating on the indie games there and the gaming scene. So I will be there probably over the weekend, the Saturday especially. I think it's Thursday through Monday or something like that. That's and yes, Dungeon Brothers asks, if Dragon Con's more socially acceptable sibling. Yes, the reason is because Dragon Con isn't for all ages, and MomoCon is. And MomoCon shuts down at night, so a lot of the people that really like Dragon Con stay away from MomoCon because it's in the World Congress Center, and if you're still in the World Congress Center at 1 a.m., they arrest you, and that's not good. And if you're wondering what MomoCon means, because everybody's some of these people are making cow jokes, Momo is the Japanese word for peach, and Georgia is the peach state. Get it? Get it? So there's that, and then just a couple weeks after that, June 9th through 11th, the Southern Fried Game Room Expo is in right across the interstate from the new SunTrust Park, home of the Atlanta Braves, it's at the Renaissance Waverly Hotel, which is connected to the Cobb Galleria, which is where Anime Weekend Atlanta has been for decades. And this is also where Southern Fried Game Room Expo was last year. They're going to be there again this year. And we are a top-tier sponsor of the Southern Fried Game Room Expo. So Vogue Network is there. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff with them. Probably I'm going to be posting some panels. Probably they've got a podcaster panel. I'll probably be on that. And we'll be there all weekend. Playing vintage arcade games and pinball tables that people have brought from their own basements. I'm not bringing anything from my basement to that. I'm bringing my basement stuff to the Vintage Computer Festival. So, Southern Fried Game Room Expo, June 9th through 11th. That is the weekend before E3. Hope you guys, if you're in the area, that is a really good time. And I would suggest, even if you're in a neighboring state, try to make a weekend out of it. You've got enough time to make it out for that. So one thing that I kind of wanted to expand on a little bit, I have played a little bit more of Persona 5. Let's talk about some current stuff going on and some games. And because I remember when I edited the show later, I realized I was sitting there saying, yeah, safety mode is probably too easy. No, I just hadn't gotten far enough in the game to be able to collect the personas that you need to be able to do other things. I was able to fill up all my personas playing on safety mode. I still enjoy it. I am playing safety mode. Is the we insult your intelligence? This is how easy this game is, and I happily play on that mode, and I'm totally fine with that. Even though I'd probably be also totally fine with easy, I am totally fine with safety mode and Persona. I have still not really had that much time to play it. I've only cleared the first palace. And dealing with the fallout from that, it's a very time-based. I have not gotten to July 7th yet, so I could try to stream it if I wanted to, but I'm not going to because it's safety mode, and nobody wants to sit on Twitch and watch somebody play super-duper easy mode because that's not fun. That's for me playing and me hanging my head in shame over on the side. But I still enjoy it, even though Atlas is quickly losing everybody out of their goodwill. To register participation for this week's episode of the Bobby Blackwolf Show on VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase fall. So the first kind of news story I want to talk about is because I know a lot of people have been looking for the hottest Christmas toy from last year, and that was the NES Classic. I have still never seen one in the flesh, so kind of like, you know, I don't think Gran Turismo 5 exists because I've never seen it. Or four, or whatever the game joke is. I'm sure my wiki will come in and tell me what the joke was, what the running gag of it was. But the NES Classic, there's a lot of people that are like, you know, I'm really tired of having to try to play this game, of trying to find it at retail or playing the scalping game, you know. But I want an NES Classic. Nintendo, help me out here, because it's a Linux box with a cute shell. And it's got 30 games on it. It's a moneymaker. And people are like, I want to throw this wallet at you, Nintendo, but you never have the NES Classic in stock anywhere. And I want to give you my money. All you got to do, can you help me out here? Because I don't want to play this game of playing in the retailer stuff. And Rob Roberts in chat says Flacco has one of those classic NES systems. They definitely exist. And Brad from Pod Culture says he has one as well. So I'm sure they exist. I just haven't seen them. It's not like Gran Turismo 5 that doesn't exist, even since I've never seen it. I actually kind of do believe the NES Classic exists because I think, like, my fiance's stepmom has one. And I'm like, how did you get one? And they don't know how, like, rare it is and hard to get it is. So I don't know. Nintendo has heard your cries that you are tired of playing the game of trying to, you know, use websites and use stuff to see, okay, this Target out in the middle of nowhere might have an NES Classic. I'm going to run there and get it. And Nintendo has heard your cries. They're going to end your pain and suffering. They're going to end it all. And they're going to fix this. They're going to listen to the consumers, and they're going to fix the problem. IGN reports that Nintendo has discontinued the NES Classic, and the last shipments will go out to retailers throughout this month. A Nintendo representative provided the following statement to IGN, quote, throughout April, NOA territories, the Nintendo of America territories, will receive the last shipments of the NES Classic systems for this year. We encourage anyone interested in obtaining the system to check with retail outlets regarding availability. We understand it has been difficult for many consumers to find a system, and for that we apologize. We have paid close attention to consumer feedback, and we greatly appreciate the incredible level of consumer interest and support for this product, unquote. Additionally, a representative told IGN, quote, an NES Classic Edition wasn't intended to be an ongoing long-term product. However, due to high demand, we did add extra shipments to our original plans, unquote. They have no plans to produce any more systems for North America. The announcement includes the discontinuation of the NES Classic controller, which was also worked on the Wii, or Wii U, really, if you had a Wii remote to plug it into. As for third-party accessories, Nintendo said that the decision whether or not to continue production of accessories will be up to each individual manufacturer. Nintendo of America would not confirm whether this announcement meant the discontinuation of the NES Classic or Famicom Mini worldwide. Nintendo said it had nothing to announce at this time regarding the future of the Nintendo Classics brand or the lifetime sales of the short-lived plug-and-play system. So, they've heard you. You don't want to fight retailers to buy a system. They're like, great, we will listen to you, so we're just going to discontinue making it. So now you don't have to fight. I mean, you do in April. They say you need to fight retailers for April. But once May comes around, you're done. You are free from the prison of having to fight retailers for the NES Classic. There's a couple angles to why they might have done this. A, it probably was just a stopgap. They needed to make money until the Switch came out. I think that's what it was. They realized that it printed money, and they said they were like, well, maybe we can do more. And then people figured out it was just a Linux box with a cute shell, and it's very easy to hack it and put hundreds of ROMs on the NES Classic. And they're like, wait a minute. Wait a minute, that's not good. There's also another thought of, they made it really cheaply and stuff, and now they realize, hey, maybe we should have allowed it to go online, and that way we could have upgraded the firmware, and we could have sold other things, and maybe they're like, well, wait a minute, maybe we could have thought this out differently. So maybe they're going back to the drawing board, or maybe they're saying, you know, this is cannibalizing the sales of the Nintendo Switch, which, by the way, is the fastest-selling console in Nintendo's history, apparently. And so that's why they don't want it, because they're fighting themselves. Now, granted, the Switch doesn't have a virtual console yet, but they have stated it will. Whether that comes true or not, who knows? I'm inclined to think it will come true, but some people never believe anything Nintendo says, and so I'm just saying that they've only claimed that virtual console will come to the Switch at a later date. Especially the Super Nintendo games are apparently going to have online support. That is also something they have claimed. We shall see. And Dungebus says, some speculation I've read is that what SJ1 Hermat pointed out, an SNES classic coming up, which I will fight people for, or that the games are heading to virtual console, or that is just a stopgap measure before the Switch is released. Pretty much. It's probably a little bit of everything. And as for the games coming to virtual console, I think all of the games that were on the NES Classic were already on virtual console somehow, either on the Wii, Wii U, or 3DS. I'm pretty sure. I can't think of. I mean, that's also because I don't have an NES Classic, so I haven't really done this. I'm just saying that off the top of my head. This is why I have chat. They're going to find out, and they're going to tell me, no, this Balloon Fight wasn't a virtual console title. And I'll be like, yes, it was. You're messing with me now. But yeah, so maybe, you know, they're going back to the drawing board and going to have, like, a better unit. You know, they call it the SNES Classic, but maybe it'll also play NES. Brad from Pop Culture says, maybe a V2 that has a cartridge slot. And I'm going to say, I'm going to be pretty sure they're not going to do that. I know that there is a Sega-authorized console that has a Genesis port on it. And you can put Genesis games in it. I know that exists. But I also remember at one of the very first big interviews I got, long interviews I got, was back in like 2005, 2006, when I started this podcast almost 12 years ago. And it was with a man by the name of Kurt Vendel, who is a legend in the Atari hardware and scene. And he was the lead engineer on the Atari Flashback 2, which I think they're on like Atari Flashback like 36 now. But the Atari Flashback 2 was interesting because it was not an emulation. The Atari Flashback 2, and I don't know if the later flashbacks also followed this, but the Atari Flashback 2 was actually the Atari 2600 on a chip. So it was not emulating the 2600. It literally was the entire Atari 2600. He had distilled it down to a chip. Just like how Jerry Ellensworth, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, who used to work at Valve and is now working on like the Cast AR augmented reality, she distilled the entire Commodore 64 down into a chip for their plug-and-play system. The Atari Flashback 2 had the same thing. And one of the things that Kurt Vendel did was he included all of the ports for a cartridge slot. Because it was an actual 2600, you could put in a 2600 cartridge into it, but you had to actually use a Dremel and cut into the case and then put a third party or a cartridge slot into the ports that he provided, into the slots on the motherboard he provided. So he had to know how to solder, he had to know how to do stuff. And the reason he said he did that was because, not because it was technically impossible to include a cartridge slot, because it absolutely was. It was, once you include a cartridge port, you are now suddenly, the company that released it, the hardware manufacturer, is suddenly now on the hook for customer service for all those 25, 30-year-old cartridges. And a lot of those cartridges don't work anymore because of the cartridge, because of time. They were stored incorrectly, what have you. So if somebody took their old Atari 2600's collection out of their attic, okay, that probably warped some of the cartridges and they don't work anymore. And they got the Atari Flashback 2 and their games that they bought with their hard-earned money maybe 25, 30 years ago, they no longer work. And they're going to call and complain to Atari because the Flashback console doesn't work as advertised. So that's why they said, we're not going to provide a cartridge port. Now, I know Sega has done this, and I don't know what their language is or if they do support trying to get the Genesis cartridges working, because I know not all Genesis cartridges work anymore. But I know that they've got that, but Atari didn't want to do that, and I am pretty sure Nintendo's customer service doesn't want to have to support a cartridge port of trying to get a lot of those old Nintendo games from the 80s that don't work anymore. No matter how much you blow on them and spit on them and put saliva on them, they're never going to work again, unfortunately. And Nintendo probably doesn't want to deal with that kind of headache. So they don't support the old hardware, but if they release an NES Classic or SNES Classic that has a cartridge port, they're now responsible for getting all of those old games working again, according to the consumer. Because if you bought an NES Classic or an SNES Classic, in a fabled SNES Classic in the future, and they said, plays your old games, and then it didn't, you would be upset because it's false advertising. They said it played my old games, and it doesn't play any of my old games. Don't blame me. I'm the consumer. The customer is always right. So I can't see them putting a cartridge slot. I was very surprised that whoever... Now, Sega themselves, I don't think, put out that mini Genesis or whatever. So that's another company, and it's not Sega. I think if Sega themselves was putting it out, they wouldn't have put a cartridge slot on it. But they're like, oh, if this other like offshoot company wants to handle all that customer service, go ahead. Let them. So I can't see them doing a cartridge slot. That's not going to happen officially from Nintendo. Now, you can get a Raspberry Pi and put an emulator on it, and it works just as well, if not better, than the NES Classic. And then I'm sure somebody has hacked on a cartridge slot for that will read from directly from your cartridge. I don't know if they've done that or not, but they probably should. That way you're not dumping any ROMs or anything. I don't know if they've been able to do that or not. Who knows? But, you know, that's you can make that Raspberry Pi even smaller than the NES Classic. Good luck in the final stages of trying to find NES Classic. You have a couple more weeks in North America. Now, they did say in their statement, this was their initial statement, Nintendo of America territories will receive the last shipments of Nintendo Entertainment System NES Classic Editions systems for this year. So they do specifically state for this year. So they're leaving. So you say there's a chance 2018 might see more shipments. You won't, but there's a chance. I'm going to tell you now, you're not going to see any more. But the door has been left open. Oh, Nintendo, you tease, says Dungeon Buster. Yes, they are teasing because Nintendo fans live on hopes and dreams, which is why they get so disappointed so often. Switching gears over to Microsoft, I had actually started reading a story last week, and then I got so sidetracked about telling you about what Project Scorpio was going to do in the future and how they were going to screw you in the future, even though they say they're not going to now. And then I completely, I was like, okay, now we're going to take calls. And I realized, I left out, the other thing I wanted to talk about with the Project Scorpio reveal. So last week, not this past week, but two weeks ago, before the last show, Microsoft released some more specs about the Project Scorpio ahead of E3. We're going to find out a lot more on E3. It is their mid-cycle refresh of the Xbox One. And the big thing I talked about last week, they're like, no, we're not going to make games that are Project Scorpio exclusive. And I said, that's great. You said the same thing to your customers before. And a couple years later, you broke that. So there are going to be Project Scorpio-specific games in about 2 or 3 years. I would say I'd guarantee it, but I'm not going to bet anybody. I'm not going to make any silly bet about that. But I can pretty much guarantee you. But they did kill something now that was very, very fundamental to the development of the Xbox One, and that is the Kinect sensor. That's right. Digital Foundry said there's no Kinect port on Scorpio. The console is based on the port arrangement of the Xbox One S, which was the first to omit a dedicated input for the peripheral, and Microsoft no longer gives out the free USB adapters for Kinect owners, although you can, I think, still buy it from the Microsoft store if you really want to still use your Kinect with the Xbox One S or the Project Scorpio. You just have to buy it. It's no longer free. So they are finally getting rid of Kinect, which was one of the things they tried to design their UI and system around. Cortana is a big thing in the one Microsoft paradigm. Windows 10 has it. The Windows Mobile has it for all four people that have Windows Mobile phones. And they're finally saying, no, we don't need that anymore. Which kind of is a shame to me, although I'll get over it, because I do use the Kinect functionality. Because I turn off Cortana, so my keyword is still Xbox, which is kind of fun when I'm talking about the Xbox and it's not powered up with people in the room, because sometimes it'll power itself on. But I use it a lot when I'm watching like movies and streaming videos, because it's a lot easier to yell at my Xbox to stop for a second. Than it is for me to like pick up the controller, turn on the controller because it's saving battery, so it turned off after 10 minutes, and then telling it to pause or whatever, and then to play again. Also, I find the whole yelling at it to take a screenshot or to record the gameplay is a lot easier than using the guide, because then you're being taken out of the game experience and stuff like that. So those were the only two uses. Now, is that worth $100-something peripheral? No, it's not. Absolutely not. Totally not worth it for that kind of tech. I would like to see, if there was some way to use like the headset for that, for those two specific functions that I used Kinect for, then I'd be okay. I'd be cool with it. But yeah, it wasn't worth the full Kinect peripheral, but it did have its use. Singular. Actually, that's technically two uses, right? So I can say uses. But it didn't really have three uses, which means it shouldn't have been a part of the system. Wyland says, I only used my Kinect when I got my first Xbox One to use my Xbox Live trial. After that, it went back in the box. So people can't do stream. There was a different thing. So let me respond to Wyland's. And that was the other thing that was kind of nice, but Microsoft never really used it, is that when you would get codes, like, you get your, like, day one codes or whatever, they had a QR code on it. Well, the Kinect sensor could actually read those QR codes. And so instead of typing in the 16 digits, you just held up the card, and it's like, oh, boom, let me go to the marketplace and redeem this for you. That was a nice feature, too. It's gone. So, Kaijudo says, so people can't do streams on Xbox Scorpio. That is something I didn't think about, is that when you use Beam, which is Microsoft's Twitch competitor, you can use Beam directly from the console. It's actually kind of harder now to stream directly to Twitch, even though I think you can. But it's a little bit different because they got rid of Snap apps and stuff like that. But now they have an integrated broadcasting just like the PS4, except it only goes to Beam. The camera is the Kinect camera. You can't hook up a USB webcam to it. It's the Kinect camera is the camera it uses. Same with Skype. So anything that uses the camera, you can't use unless you get this adapter for your Kinect. I actually did not think about that until Kaijudo brought it up. Now, you can still use the microphone because, you just use your Xbox Live headset, and that's what it uses anyway. I turn off – I don't stream or I don't use the Kinect microphone for streaming or online play or anything like that. And SJ Wonder Matt says, the always online reversal after E3 a few years ago killed the Kinect, because I'm sure there was original plan that would have depended on it. A lot of their stuff actually depended on the online, always online, and they had ideas that would make it great for the consumer, but they forgot the fact that, they have to start from square one, and get the consumer to buy into square one, and the consumer did not buy into square one. And some of them still, in fact, one of them's in the chat room, some of them still hold Microsoft accountable, even though they didn't do any of that stuff. They listened to everybody and backtracked and said, okay, fine, we're going to find other ways to make the experience better. They still hold it against Microsoft and still think that Microsoft is terrible, even though they didn't actually do it because they listen to people. They listen to their consumers. And but people, some people still hold that against Microsoft, that they even thought about anything that required the online connection, some people still hold Microsoft accountable for that. And SJ Winter Matt says, people are also freaking out about the camera always being on. And I understand that, but we live in a day and age when Burger King can make a commercial, and then that commercial sets off home automation devices. In fact, I could probably set off a home automation device if you're listening to this on speakers. I'm going to try not to, because that would be a dick move, and I don't want to be that today. I'm in a good mood. But there are two really name brand devices from two really huge internet companies that are always listening to you. Everything that you say, they can hear it. And people that I actually know somebody who freaked out about the idea of the Kinect, yet they have the Amazon box in their home, and they love it. And they can call the name of the Amazon box, which, like I said, I am trying very hard not to say it because I don't want to set off your device. The Internet of Things is coming around, and people are loving it, and they're the same people that were freaked out about the Kinect in 2008. So the Kinect really was ahead of its time, because now we have devices that do exactly what Kinect did, and people are welcoming them into their kitchens, into their living rooms. But one of the things that Microsoft wanted to do early on with the Always Online, and they had to put it on the back burner to try to re-engineer how to do it when they no longer require an online internet connection for the Xbox One to run, which, by the way, you don't need an Xbox One, an online connection to use the Xbox One, just they're making some features that probably require it every once in a while. But they walked back. But they wanted to do some stuff where you could have greater ownership of your digital titles and be able to do things that you can do it in brick-and-mortar stores. They want to be able to do it. And the initial way they designed it required that always-online connection. And when that got rejected by the community at large, they had to re-engineer it. And so here we are several years later, and they're finally bringing one of those things that they wanted to have at the launch of the console. They're finally bringing it now. Game Informer reports that according to an announcement from Microsoft posted on Reddit that was given to participants of the Xbox Insider Program, which I haven't checked, but I am in that program, the company will soon implement a self-serve refund system for digital purchase from the Microsoft Store on both Windows 10 and Xbox One. This applies to both games and apps that have been used for either less than 2 hours or have been owned for less than 2 weeks. Who does this sound like? Where have I heard that policy before? To request a refund, you must navigate to account.microsoft.com, sign into your account, and select payment and billing from the top menu bar. From there, you will be able to view your order history and click a button that says Request a Refund. These self-serve refunds are not yet available, but will be coming soon. DLC, season passes, and games add-ons are not eligible for refunds, and the game must have been downloaded and launched prior to requesting a refund. Furthermore, you need to wait at least a day after the game's release before refunding the product. While refunds can apply to both games and apps, some Windows 10 apps may be excluded. Microsoft also states that it is right to block users should they be found to be abusing the refund program. So, where have I heard this before? Could it be Steam? Dungeon Bus says, hold on, I need to adjust the valve on this faucet. But you know what? We can sit there and make jokes, but I think that it's a good idea. And if Valve needed to do it first to make it something that was worth, that people liked and was worth doing, I have absolutely no problem with Microsoft, and I hope Sony, and I hope Nintendo adopt the same policy in the future. I have no problem with copycats in this sense, because that means it's better for everybody. Steam shouldn't be the only platform where you can request a refund on your digital purchases. I firmly agree that. So congratulations to Microsoft. Good job on you. Yes, I know that it's kind of it's similar to what Steam does. But you know what? I think it's fine there, and I think it's going to be fine for you as well. Dungeon Buster says, it's a bold step for Microsoft. I hope it works out for everyone involved. I do, too. Speaking of things that are work out for everyone involved, I'm taking a music break. It's going to let you stop listening to my voice for a little bit, unless you're on the podcast feed, then it starts back up like 2 seconds later. But it's going to let me rest my voice, and then we're going to take your calls about anything going on in the gaming industry. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com.
It's me, Mario. Not really. Obi-Wan Jabroni instead. You're listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show on VogNetwork.com. Sorry for the terrible impression, by the way, Charles Martinet. I tried.
We would have played the actual Charles Martinet impression, but it got discontinued. It didn't. We're waiting for our next shipment. Thanks, Nintendo. If you want to leave a bumper, you do not need to be waiting for a shipment of the NES Classic. All you got to do is send me an MP3 with just your voice to bumpers at bobbyblackwolf.com, or you can call the toll-free number at 1-888-36-GAME-1. Toll-free in North America, or you can call right now. You can call that number right now, or call Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype. That is all one word. That's our Skype account. And you can call in and talk a little bit about anything going on in the gaming industry if you've been playing something that other people may need to know about, or you've been playing Persona 5 and you're farther than I am and you're playing on a mode that's not safety, feel free. On the podcast feed, we actually played music from Persona 5, and I wanted to talk about this because I made a reference to this. We played the battle theme from Persona 5, which is called Last Surprise, and it's turned into one of my favorite like short-term memes on the internet right now, because the entire chorus of it is because they're thieves, they're phantom thieves in the game. Spoiler alert. It's not really a spoiler alert. They talk about it in like the first line, but it's the whole like chorus is you never saw it coming. You'll never see it coming or something like that. So there are all these memes, and it's like this like Soul Train type, you know, 70s feel. And so they've got like there's one that's like this obviously like 80s kid with the poofy hair, 80s little boy. And he's like dancing to it and stuff. But then there's also the whole, you know, like surprise, you know, where somebody's pranking someone and they never saw it coming and stuff. So it's actually a fun little meme. And it won't last long, but it's out there and it's kind of funny. And I was really only talking about that seeing if somebody was going to be calling in. And it is a, and JD actually says, for being battle music, that sure is a jazzy number. I like it. Yes, it is. The Persona series always has, you know, really interesting, like the art direction in both visual and audio, in the musical styles and everything. It's always been a lot of fun, and it's always been a lot of very different from, you know, other things. I've got like a lot of Persona soundtracks, and I've always kind of played them on the show every once in a while. So it's just the art direction. It's very stylistically its own thing. Just the entire Persona series is. And Dungeon Bus says, yeah, they really amped it up with Persona 5, it feels like. I mean, you got to realize, like, Persona 4 actually got, a Theatrhythm-style music game for the Vita called Persona 4 Dancing All Night. And it was all the music from Persona 4, or, you know, like, you know, different remixes of music from Persona 4. So it's up there with, you know, some people revere it as much as the Final Fantasy music for different reasons than Final Fantasy. It's not symphonic or orchestral or anything like that, but it is iconic to the series. And SJ Wonder Matt says, Persona 4 did have a 3-hour tutorial. It pretty much did. That was kind of bad, but they fixed it a little bit. I talked about it when I first talked about the game last week, but Persona 5... it still feels like there's like a 3-hour, 4-hour tutorial, but you do a lot more, and you're not just watching cutscenes. It wasn't as much a tutorial in Persona 4 that was 3 hours. It was just those were all the cutscenes. Like, you didn't have control of your character for like the first 3 hours, it felt like, except for like you could run forward, and then you ran forward, and then the next series of cutscenes started. Tireclaw asks, how long before they do a Persona fighting game? About 3 or 4 years ago, it was called Persona 4 Arena, and it was actually a PlayStation Plus game. It was on the PS3, and it was actually a PlayStation Plus title, and I actually picked it up then, and it's made by, Arc System Works, which does, like, the Guilty Gear game, so it's a 2D fighter in the style of Guilty Gear and all that stuff, and it even continued the story of Persona 4. It was actually a continuation of the Persona 4 story, and it was called Persona 4 Arena, and I think it even had, like, some Persona 3 characters in there as well. So how long before they make a fighting game? About, what, 3-4 years ago? 5 years ago? Something like that. I played it a little bit. Didn't play it all that much, but it's still on my PS3 because it was a PlayStation Plus game. Dungeonbuster says, Persona 4's first mission was essentially a huge tutorial. Persona 5 is kind of the same way, but they have a good pace to it, and it was fun to get through. Yes. And if you're wondering, I've never played the previous Personas, will I get it? You will, because Persona's like Final Fantasy in the sense that there's, you know, common elements to all of them, but you don't need to really know them to enjoy it, because it's a new story, new people. They all take place in the same universe, I think, but they're not connected in that sense. Like, you don't need to know what happened in Persona 4 to enjoy Persona 5, because the characters in Persona 5 don't know what happened in Persona 4. So nobody's going to be calling tonight, so we're going to go ahead and, because it's been 2 weeks, we're going to try to catch up with some of our friends all across the continent. Coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com is Orange Lounge Radio, and we like to check in with them to see how they're doing. Sacramento, you guys there?
We're here, Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing well. So 2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks. How are you doing?
Good. And I'm glad to see our studio works again, because this is the first. I mean, I co-host on another podcast on Mondays that's not on Vogue, and everything was working then. But it's nice to see that, yes, the internet is working on the computer again, and everything is up and running again. Since we put the whole ordeal. You probably saw the Facebook picture. The whole ordeal in a box and move it over to WestSac for the day.
Yeah. And whenever you're moving a desktop that has, like, wires in it and stuff, you always worry.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely heavily considering the laptop switch, like, sooner rather than later.
Yeah, but it sounded like it went well from where I was.
Yeah, we had a great time at the event. I'm glad. Yeah, I heard you were listening in the car for a little bit.
Yes.
So some minor tech hiccups. Our computer got unplugged during one part. You know, those types of things.
But have you not bought a UPS yet?
No, the thing straight up being unplugged, I don't think would have stopped that.
Yeah.
So,
but have you bought a UPS yet?
I haven't, but we'll get another reason why I want to go to laptop. Anyway, if I go to laptop, I have battery. But anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, the talks were very, very good.
Yeah.
Now, it's gotten to a point where the IGDA here in SAC, you know, we really value them, and we feel like they value us too, and they really just kind of trust us to run the show up there in the box the whole day. So we had a good time, but I was in there all day, and I didn't get to really play any of the games, which made me really sad, because I know that's what it's all about. But I got to see them from a distance as I was walking in and out and moving equipment around.
Yeah.
There was one that caught my eye, and I don't remember the name of it. Loki, maybe you remember the name of it. It was it was like a racing game, but it was on lawnmowers. And it was like it looked like Mario Kart, but like your feel was like how much grass you were cutting.
I think it was like Mow and Go.
Yeah, it was like Mow and Go. It was a really clever little twist on the racer. Yeah. So that was one that definitely caught my eye.
That's cool.
That's cool.
So did you guys, like, I know you didn't, Rob, but like did Matt, you get to try a Vive finally?
I don't think it was a Vive that they had there. I thought it was an Oculus Rift.
I think it was an Oculus. The guy. I'm surprised you didn't know the guy there that was doing the talk, because I guess he has his own VR podcast. I didn't really get to talk to him, unfortunately, because, again, I was kind of trapped in that little space. Willingly, I loved it there, but I didn't get to talk to that guy that much, unfortunately. But he seemed like he does a lot with the VR stuff. So, and he was talking a lot about it too.
He has his own podcast too.
Yeah, I was like, I wish Bobby was listening right now if he was out there. So,
yeah, sorry. Yeah. But yeah, no, I think when you were talking about I think it was an Oculus Rift, because you said you played like Robo Recall.
Yeah, it was Robo Recall, and it was a Rift. The Vive controllers, and that was the Oculus controller that they had.
Yeah. So are you guys still looking for your NES Classic? Are you still fighting for that?
You know, I mean, I wanted to still get one, but and not at the prices that their scalpers are going for. And I'm sorry, you know, I wanted to give Nintendo money. They didn't want it, so
they just wanted to end your suffering of trying to find them. So they're like, we're just not going to send them out anymore.
I totally see this coming, is they're going to try to push virtual console. And I'm sorry, no, it's not the same. If it was the same, then why put out the console?
You know, usually I'm one to counterpoint a lot of Loki's Nintendo things, but this is one of those things I don't think I can defend. I think even a lot of Nintendo's fans are in awe at this. And even if there is virtual console, I mean, will they put out NES controllers that work with the Switch? Because that was part of the charm of the whole system, was that you had like the, and I'm using my quotey fingers, actual controllers, because we know they're not the actual, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know,
right.
The actual controllers to play the games, even though the cords were too short.
Unless they retool it and add like virtual console on the actual console, which would be fantastic.
And upgradable firmware. That's, I'm still convinced it's because of the hacks that Nintendo pulled. Yeah. I know not everybody agrees with me there, but I really think that's why Nintendo has pulled it. I don't think they've walked away from this thing yet. I think you'll see a version 2 this holiday. But there was, even if they plan to do a version 2 this holiday, there was no reason for them to walk away from it now. Apple doesn't do that. Apple will sell an iPhone 6 right up till the day before they announce the iPhone 7. So there's no reason for Nintendo to pull it this early unless they do not want this version 1.0 out there any further.
Doesn't matter what they do, it will be hacked.
I know, but they'll do something. This next one will connect to the internet, so A, they can sell you more games, B, they can upgrade the firmware on demand. I would bet money on it. If there's an NES Classic 2, it's on the internet to sell you more games and upgrade the firmware.
And I do want to say this, like, I'm not going to defend Nintendo because I agree with both of you on this, but like Raginator says, Nintendo will not do that because doing that makes too much sense. Nintendo has actually wound up doing a lot of things that in hindsight made a lot of sense. And I don't think this would be one of them, but we can't say that Nintendo never does anything that makes sense. We just don't understand it at the time, and then we look back and like, oh, okay.
At the end of the day, they are insanely happy with how the Switch is selling, as they should be. So every criticism we've dropped here on OLR doesn't really matter because the Switch is selling, and congrats to them. But you know what? For what it's worth, yes, there's always going to be criticisms, and you know we've done the Tyra Banks top model thing ad nauseum, that we even have you doing it now, Bobby. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, you know, their success, I'm really happy for them. I do think the Switch is a great piece of technology, and I'm kind of happy to see that there have been a lot of games coming out for it, like a pretty regular stream of games since the release. They've been using a lot of indie games very, very well to really eliminate that perception that nothing's coming out on the system.
You know what came out on Switch this week, which is great for some friends of yours.
Jackbox Feedback, right?
Yes, and if you want to talk about an easy way to portable version, you know, because like the problem that I had is when I wanted my friends to play it, I had to take my Xbox over to their house and hook it up to their TV and everything.
I didn't even think of that. You're right. That's going to make that game insanely easy to move around and instant party. I didn't even think of that. I just figured it was a real easy port for Jackbox to make, so why not? Let's cash in. But you're right, the portability of that's going to be huge.
Because it's either that or get a laptop that can do it, which a lot of people, you know, I mean, it runs on MacBooks and stuff like that, so this is not the first time it's portable, but mm-hmm. it's the portable system, and it's the console market, so that's why I thought that was great, because now I can be like, oh, I'll just take my Switch, and I can set up a Jackbox party, you know, as long as I'm on someone's Wi-Fi. And I don't have to, like, lug my entire Xbox or my entire PlayStation or try to get my laptop, you know, in a position where everybody can see it.
Yeah, I think the portability is going to be great for the game. And, you know, just seeing I'm going to be really curious to see what happens when Mario Kart hits and when ARMS starts hitting and a little more of Nintendo's, like, oomph, the games that are really going to, you know, make a buzz, I suppose.
And I think the funny thing is, I don't know if you read this, because when they talked about how the Switch was the fastest-selling Nintendo console, they then also released numbers about Zelda Breath of the Wild. And because they add in both the Switch and the Wii U sales, they actually say that Zelda has more than a 100% attach rate with the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, I know, because of the Wii U numbers.
But I thought that the ones I saw, though, they actually said it was on the Switch that they were counting the quantities for.
Wait, so more people are buying the game on the Switch than actually have Switch consoles?
That's what I thought I read, but then again, you know, misleading headlines, so who knows?
If the number was like 101% or something, I might believe that, but I don't know if I believe it otherwise.
Yeah. So what else are you guys going to be talking about tonight?
Well, actually, we are honored here tonight. We actually have some developers of a new game that just came out on Steam here live with us in studio. The game is called Lil Tanks and just came out last Tuesday, I believe, on Steam. And so you can check that out. And we have the developers here in-house. We're going to talk all about the game from you know, where it came from. And I know there was a Kickstarter that was successful behind it. So we'll talk a little bit about that and how things have been going with the game so far and tell you a little bit about it. If you like the bullet hell sorts of games, I think you'll be into this. Although, you know, the first few levels I played, it wasn't really hell. It was maybe purgatory. But I think the game has a ramp up.
And to clarify, because I know people in podcasts might be yelling at us right now, ActDeft says in chat about the Zelda thing, people bought two copies of Zelda. Like, they got a regular copy and a limited edition, or collector's editions, or people who got the game despite not having the console. So that's where they say the over greater than 100% attach rate came from.
I guess I can't talk. I got my second copy of Mass Effect Andromeda and my third copy of Bayonetta in the past couple weeks. So more power to y'all.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network at fognetwork.com. Catch us live and interact with the show directly. You can leave me a voicemail on any topic or leave a bumper if you've seen the show on the toll-free number 1-888-36-GAME-1. Or you can email me an MP3 to bumpers at bobbyblackwolf.com. Facebook.com/BobbyBlackWolf or Twitter at BobbyBlackWolf is where I am. Or you can submit feedback on the episode pages here at VogNetwork.com. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone the show is not for everybody, but it might be for somebody who doesn't know about it yet. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the wonderful chatter. So thank you very much, DC Nate, Ronma, VHHV, Burr, Doomplague, Fifth Dream, Havoc978, JD, Shadow Next Gen, Tiger Clawed, Loki, A10, Act Deft, Bacon Bits, Bowl, Brad from Pod Culture, Cherry, DeBlue Guy, Dungeon Buster, Fluke, Hitstun, Ice P, Kaijudo, Kazan, MXC, MXT, Raginator, Rob Roberts, Spiffy, SJ100 Matt, Stoppy, Wyland, and William Murderface. So I am out. I did see the end of this show coming. So I'm not surprised. It's not my last surprise. And I'll see you guys next week. Take care. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.